also our email is astraighttalk@yahoo.com.
Thank you so much.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Oh, thank you for being here. Thank you, Sherman, for being here. Thank you, Deborah.
It's good to be back.
Thank you, Tony, so
much. My pleasure.
Thank you,
President, Ms. Tina, for the opportunity.
Yes. Absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity, Tina. Yeah.
Don't forget to vote.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, please don't forget to vote.
Don't forget to vote.
And again, the iTrades Career Day this Saturday from 9 to 2:30, and you can go to register at iTradesPDX2008eventbrite.com.
Okay, holla.
Yeah, don't forget to vote.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening and welcome to Prison Pipeline. My name is Emma Lugo and I'm here tonight with Karen Mockran for part two of an interview we had last month. Karen is a criminal defense attorney who represents clients, including sometimes representing transgender clients who are involved in the criminal justice system. Who have been ensnared in it. So, Karen, welcome to Prison Pipeline.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back.
Yeah, thank you. So let's just do a refresher real quick. So you're Karen Mockran, and you're a criminal defense attorney here in Portland?
Yes. I tend to traverse the Tri-County area and will sometimes go outside of it, but mainly serving Multnomah, Clackamas, and Washington counties, yeah.
And you've been in practice for about 9 years?
About eight, and then we'll shortly be heading into my ninth, yeah.
And you do mostly, you're in private practice now, but...
I am. I'm a solo practitioner at this point, so it's me and whoever comes to me for help.
Right. And I think we talked about it in the last interview, but you mentioned when I met you at the State Bar, CLE, that you do sometimes represent transgender clients.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's I'm transgender myself, mm-hmm. and so that's a subject of interest to me. I mean, I'm really interested in what happens to transgender people when they enter the criminal justice system. How are they treated? That's differently, and then of course, what happens to them when they're behind bars, and what happens when they get out. So, but we're not going to talk about what happens to folks in prison because that's not your specialty. You work on trying to represent people so that they don't go to prison in the first place, right?
That is largely where my practice lies, yes. Although inherent in the practice of criminal defense is knowing what prison terms are looking like, what you're likely to face if you are convicted or if you take a particular plea offer. So no criminal defense attorney can be worth their salt if they don't actually know about the prison system. But it's not my expertise in terms of like prisoner rights and things like that, and exactly what goes on inside a prison is stuff that I am continually educating myself on, going to CLEs myself, continued legal education is what that stands for, in order to understand better and be able to better empathize with, oh, what's really ahead for my clients. But I am fundamentally a trial attorney and want to, if there is a road to an acquittal, or a dismissal, so anything that can be done on the front end, when the person stands accused and is presumed innocent, that any, if I can find any road to a dismissal or acquittal, then that's what I do. That is my basic role.
It sounds like you have a passion for people who may be either wrongfully accused, or people who maybe they've done something or they haven't, but like what's coming their way isn't fair.
I definitely see myself as a champion of people in such situations, although of course I defend anybody who is charged with a crime, especially if it's going to be a court-appointed case. And guilt or innocence is not necessarily my concern. My concern is the government able to prove its case beyond a reasonable doubt? And if the government cannot do that, it has no business locking someone in a cage. So my passion is for the rules of justice and the constitutional principles on which our country is founded, which are unfortunately sometimes just aspirational and we don't always live up to them in reality. So certainly if there's somebody wrongfully accused, yes, I will go to the mat for them as much as I possibly can. But the same is true for anybody that is just simply accused. Whatever I can do to make sure that the process works and that I am defending this person to the best of my abilities, I will absolutely do it.
Where did you, where do you think you got your interest, I mean, your passion for justice and for people who are wrongfully accused?
That's an interesting question. I was kind of a weird kid who, I loved talking to my maternal grandfather about law and politics. I actually was placed in a so-called, in scare quotes, gifted class in fourth and fifth grade, where we actually discussed law and politics and actually studied the justice system, and we studied the electoral system, and we did mock elections and mock trials. I'd kind of been hooked ever since, and it just kind of seeped into my blood that this is a very important role to play, to stand between the accused and the full force of the state and the full force of the government that says we want to take away this person's freedom and say, hold on, wait, we need to examine this further. There are holes in this case. There is doubt here. And if that doubt is reasonable, then we have to let this person go.
So before we get to talking more about trans folks, when we were chatting earlier, you mentioned that you had argued a case before the Oregon Supreme Court, which changed something. But I'm not a lawyer, so I don't understand all of that.
Sure.
But apparently it was something quite significant. So can you just briefly summarize what was that case about and what did it change?
Sure. The law as it stood at the time gave largely unfettered discretion to prosecutors to just label crimes violations. So if you think about like theft, or you think about murder, or you think about rape, you know, these things conjure up the images of crime. This person needs to be punished, and generally punished by being removed from society and locked away. There's another way that you can break the law, which we've all done, and that's in Oregon, we call it violations. Some states might call them infractions. These are technically, you have broken the law and are going to be punished, but society doesn't necessarily take it all that seriously. So think now here of traffic tickets or parking tickets. Those are your typical violations
parking
of the
tickets?
Law. Parking tickets?
Parking tickets
are violations of the law, sure.
Oh my goodness.
So now all that happens is you get a slap on the wrist, fine. But what was going on in Oregon at this particular time was that so crimes get divided into two different categories. There's felonies, which are really, really serious, and they can send you to prison for more than a year of your life. And then there are what we call misdemeanors, which are considered less serious. You can't go to prison, but you can go to jail, but only for a year at most. And very often, you'll just get probation, depending on the misdemeanor itself. And there was a law on the books that said that any time there was a misdemeanor being charged, if the prosecution wanted, they could just say, let's call this a violation. And that means you're still being charged with, let's say, theft, which is a crime for which you can be locked up. And now you're being sent, quite literally, to traffic court. And the difference between violation court and criminal court is staggering, because in criminal court, you have rights that are sacred. Like, you get a jury to decide your case. The government has to prove its case beyond a reasonable doubt, which is a high standard to meet. It's the highest in the law. Also, if you can't afford an attorney, you have the right to have the government pay for your attorney during your proceedings. Well, all that gets taken away if you're sent to traffic court, where it's not considered a crime. So if anyone's ever been in traffic court, you can bring an attorney if you can afford one, but if you can't, too bad. And the government does not have to prove its case beyond a reasonable doubt. They just have to do what we call in the law preponderance of the evidence. That just means they kind of have to tip the scale in their favor. And it's really, really easy to tip the scale in their favor, and there isn't any other scrutiny. You don't get a jury, you just get a judge. And so a lot of people were finding themselves being charged with misdemeanors, sometimes quite serious ones. So my particular client was charged with, if it had been completed, would have been a felony. So the most serious kind of crime. But because it was only attempted and it was a low-level felony, because everything gets divided into subcategories, then it became a misdemeanor because it was just an attempt. So I don't know if people can are following along with this. I'll do the best I can.
I'm doing my best.
Okay. The ultimate result was this, that my client was arrested for trying but failing to commit a felony. Trying and failing to commit a felony in this particular case was considered a misdemeanor itself. And the prosecutor said, let's just call this a violation. There was no way they were going to prove this case beyond a reasonable doubt. There was no way that a jury was going to, not no way, but I was pretty confident of my ability to win in front of a jury. But we didn't get a jury. We got sent literally to traffic court. And
traffic court?
Literally to traffic court. And the trial, in my personal opinion, was farcical. And
could this person have gone to jail for going
No. Okay. And that's the distinction that the prosecution
But they would have had a record.
On the record is going to essentially be attempted first degree theft,
which could impact,
ruin your life.
Yeah.
Absolutely ruin your life.
Your credit, trying to get a job,
yeah.
Anything.
Yeah. An employer is not going to look at attempted felony theft and say, oh, but it has a V by that, so that must mean the government considers this as serious as a traffic ticket. No, they're going to say this is a thief who tried to be a felon. And so I was arguing that this person should be accorded all the rights that a criminal defendant gets, whether they take us to traffic court or not. And
so they have a right to a jury trial.
Jury, reasonable doubt, and court-appointed counsel. And
so that means that the next time I get a parking ticket,
no.
I can request a jury trial?
No.
Okay. The
no, there are bona fide...
I thought I was following it.
It means that if you're charged with an actual crime, that they can't just send you to traffic court. Or if they do choose to treat it as a violation, you still get a jury trial with reasonable doubt standard of proof.
See, so, I'd be one of those really annoying people who'd be like, I did not deserve that parking ticket.
Well, you can still find a parking ticket.
I want a jury trial. I want a court-appointed attorney.
You'd have to take that up with the legislature, and I don't think they're going to want to spend taxpayer money on jury trials for simple violations.
Well, that's a great congratulations on
that. Oh, thank you. It's been a while now, but yes, that was very gratifying to do that and get all the way up to the Supreme Court and have them unanimously agree with me and my client, and at that point all the Occupy Portland protesters, that yes, these rights can't be taken away from you merely because the prosecution decides that your misdemeanor is a violation.
So I wanted to move on to a little bit more serious topic.
Sure.
I know this isn't really your specialty, but I know that it's something that comes across your desk sometimes. One of the issues that we talk a lot on Prison Pipeline when we're talking about sentencing and the challenges that defendants have when they go before a judge, and they're facing maybe a really big potential time served, is the strategy that a prosecution will have of stacking charges. So, they might like slap on five or six charges for one offense,
mm-hmm.
thinking of like different ways of labeling the charge. So assault might be broken up into like four or five categories of charges. And anyways, we on the show we call it stacking charges.
Sure.
Because it's something that we're constantly hearing from people who are incarcerated and from defendants, that is one of the biggest reasons that they don't go to trial, because they're so afraid of, you know, getting crazy long sentences.
Absolutely. The strategy of charging anything that could possibly stick under the law, and then saying to the defendant, we will drop charges A, B, and C if you will plead to charges D, E, and F, that happens all the time. I mean, it's just regular practice.
Right.
I don't know necessarily that I have any grand insight to make things better, and each county in Oregon is its own universe, and each district attorney will have his or her own or their own policy about how to go about doing this. But certainly when a person commits an action, that action can constitute many different crimes. And so the strategy of charging as many of them as actually fits the facts, and then getting the defendant to buckle because of the fear that the jury will convict on everything and that you could get the harshest sentence possible, it's all very true. And it's sometimes defense attorneys are just the bearers of bad news. When we end up counseling, it's going to be really tough to go to trial, because yes, the trial is door number one, and you could end up convicted of all of this, whereas the prosecution is saying it will drop all of these charges if you'll plead to this. There's a lot of negotiation that will go on behind the scenes, back and forth between the defense attorney and the prosecutor, and the defendant has to be intimately involved in that and understand what's happening. And it's not an unreasonable consideration to say, I don't want to face, years and years and years of my life in prison when I could just plead to the misdemeanor and be on probation and hopefully just get this over with. But that's something that defense attorneys really need to explain to their clients to make sure that the client understands fully what's happening and what are all the avenues that we could go down. And I want my clients to understand everything I can get them to understand, because the decision about whether to accept a plea or go to trial is theirs. I cannot take that from them. And so I want my clients to understand exactly what could happen if we go this way, what could happen if we go the other way, what could happen if we take it all the way to trial, so that when my client finally makes that decision, at the very least, they feel, okay, she counseled me correctly. I trust her, and I believe I made the right call. But can it be problematic to what you're describing as stacking charges? It can be. I suppose it could be argued from the prosecutor's perspective that this is the way of securing a conviction when you have someone dangerous that we really need to protect society from. Prosecutors are not, by and large, not, you know, evil. They're doing their job and trying to protect the world from actual criminals. It's just that the net is so wide right now, and we often tend to think of criminal as this type of person, when in fact all a criminal is as someone who has broken the law, who has committed a crime, and that can be anyone. It could be me, it could be you, it could be anybody on the street. But the net gets so wide, and then if you get prosecutors that are zealous enough to stack charges against someone who doesn't really pose a threat, yeah, that can be problematic.
Mm-hmm. So for the last part of the show, I'd like to just focus a little bit on representing trans clients.
Sure.
The last show we talked about maybe things that you need to kind of suss out when you're talking to juries. We talked mostly about juries. Maybe I was thinking that for this show we could talk a little bit about judges.
Okay.
And what do judges need to know about trans clients, like if you're going to be representing them before a judge?
Well, to a certain extent...
Is it just about kind of raising the language within the courtroom so that judges respect trans folks' pronouns and their gender identity? Are there judges who have bias against trans folks? Is this an issue?
Oh, I'm sure that there are. We've reached a point in history, at least in the state of Oregon, and at least up here in the Portland metropolitan area, where it's quite heartening, because you can go into courtrooms and it's quite common for the clerks to come out and say, before the judge takes the bench, can we get everyone's pronouns so that we respect everyone? And so we have reached a point where, at the very least, that under the law and ostensibly in the court, the judges are going to respect that much, and they're going to be quite mindful of don't misgender somebody and talk to them respectfully. Whether they get it and really understand it is a wholly different story. Mm-hmm. Learning judges is, you know, judges are human beings. They are they are just people, and they have a very difficult job to do. And so, sure, raising awareness is a very good thing, and it does tend to be happening. I mean, there's a lot more conferences going on about how to respectfully treat trans people.
Is that something that happens among judges? Is there are there workshops and trainings that are offered?
Sometimes, yes. Uh-huh. I know that that certainly happened in Multnomah County, and has probably, although I don't have firsthand knowledge, happened in other counties. It's if you're ultimately going to have a what we would call a bench trial, that the defendant says, I don't want a jury because I don't trust a jury for whatever reason. I would rather have a case tried to the judge. Then the attorney involved has to really know the person that they're going to be talking to. And so it behooves an attorney just to know as much about each judge that they could go in front of. But what judges need to know is not tremendously different from what juries need to know, except insofar as sentencing comes into play, because it's the judge who's going to do the sentencing. And so if there are concerns about a transgender prisoner and where they should go to prison, how they should be treated in the prison, what sort of protections they need, and why that's important, then certainly judges need to be educated on that, and to a good extent they're becoming so, which is encouraging.
So maybe more trainings done at the OSB.
Maybe more trainings at the bar. Also, just each county, like I said, like each county in Oregon is its own universe. Mm-hmm. They each have the judges kind of have their own collective understanding of the law as well as their individual understanding of the law. When I'm doing cases in Washington counties, for instance, it's a very different understanding of how I'm going to approach the judges and how they tend to think of the law as when I'm in Multnomah or Clackamas. So mm-hmm. they're just, and it's just a facet of being human and mm-hmm. having different approaches. And people understand the law very differently. So individual judges will understand the laws very differently mm-hmm. and make the best rulings that they can with their own understandings. And of course, that means their prejudices can come into play because they're human, and they will try their best not to be prejudiced. But it's an ongoing conversation that has to happen. It has to be this ongoing, constant reminder that just of what being trans actually is, which we talked a little bit in the first half. So I suppose I don't need to reiterate all of it.
Well, Karen, we've burnt through another entire show, if you can believe us.
I can. I can talk, as you can see.
But this has been a really great and very educational. So I really want to thank you for taking some time out to come down here and talk with us. At KBOO, you know, Prison Pipeline is really dedicated to raising awareness about all aspects of the criminal justice system and really trying to get at some of the roots of what's going on. You know, we're really curious about why are there so many more people in prison now than there were a generation ago?
Right.
Why are there longer sentences? What's going on at the state legislature? And getting the perspective of a criminal defense attorney is really helpful, and especially getting one who has some awareness of transgender clients and their needs is especially a real blessing. So thanks for taking out time here at KBOO. If people want to get in touch with you, how can they reach you?
Sure. Well, thank you for all of that, first of all, and thank you for the opportunity. So you're
Karen Mochran.
Karen J. Mochran, J being middle initial. And on the web, criminaldefensekm.com, so the words criminal defense and then my initials km.com, and my email is karen@criminaldefensekm.com, and Karen spelled the boring way, k-a-r-e-n, and I can also be reached by phone or text at 503-752-6340.
Well, it's been a real pleasure having you on. I'm going to ask you like just the 60-second question at the end of the show. If you had a chance to argue any case in front of the Supreme Court, what would you want to argue?
Oh my goodness! Like the U.S. Supreme Court? Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh! I'm very enthusiastic about the idea of unenumerated rights, so rights that are not actually written in the Constitution, but which merit constitutional protection. I'm a big fan of the Ninth Amendment, which is anyone who's a legal scholar will tell you is really not the way to go in terms of U.S. jurisprudence, but I would love to find something that would enable me to explain why I believe that something is fundamentally a fundamental right, which is the current nomenclature. And if I could argue that the expression of self is one of those fundamental rights, that to peacefully manifest and express one's own sense of self is indeed one of the rights that deserves constitutional protection and strict scrutiny, as we call it under the law, I would love to get that done. Love to do that.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Karen. I really appreciate having you on Prison Pipeline. And
thank you so much.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to KBOO. We'll see you next week.
Baby, you understand me now.
If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Tune into KBOO Tuesday, November 6th from 6 to 10 p.m. for election night coverage. We'll have national coverage by Pacifica and Native Voice One. And at 8 p.m., our local news team will provide election results and analysis. Again, that's election night coverage Tuesday, November 6th, starting at 6 p.m. after the KBOO Evening News here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Yemenietz, Girls Bringing the Light, at our KBOO at the Clinton monthly film screening on Thursday, November 8th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Yemenietz, Girls Bringing the Light, is a feature film telling the story of three girls and their entrepreneurial skills in a nation whose reputation includes being one of the worst places to be a woman, the poorest country in the Arab world, and a failed state. It explores challenges of youth unemployment, drug abuse, and a struggling education system. Again, that's Yemenietz, Girls Bringing the Light, at our KBOO at the Clinton monthly film screening on Thursday, November 8th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Yo. Yo. KBOO is excited to be part of the 2018